The man with the white face entered the carriage at Rugby. He dropped into the corner over against me with a sigh and became motionless, with his eyes staring vacantly. Presently he was moved by a sense of my observation, looked up at me, and put out a spiritless hand for his newspaper. Then he glanced again in my direction. "That book is about dreams." He hung silent for a space as if he sought words. "Yes," he said at last, "but they tell you nothing."
There was no sound now in the observatory, and the lantern waned steadily. Outside, there was the occasional cry of some animal in alarm or pain, or calling to its mate, and the intermittent sounds of the Malay and Dayak servants. Presently, one of the men began a queer chanting song in which the others joined at intervals. After this, it would seem that they turned in for the night, for no further sound came from their direction, and the whispering stillness became more and more profound. The clockwork ticked steadily. Then the lantern went out, and all the observatory was black.
It was a large moth or butterfly, its wings spread in butterfly fashion. It was strange it should be in the room at all, for the windows were closed. Strange that it should not have attracted his attention when fluttering to its present position. Strange that it should match the tablecloth. Stranger far that to him, haply, the great entomologist, it was altogether unknown. There was no delusion. It was crawling slowly towards the foot of the lamp. "New genus, by heavens! And in England," said Hapley, staring. Then he suddenly thought of Porkins. Nothing would have maddened Porkins more, and Porkins was dead.
After a time, his fierceness gave way to melancholia. He reverted to death as a topic. He thought of the canal he had just crossed, and doubted whether he shouldn't stand with his head out, even in the middle. And it was while drowning was in his mind that the purple pileus caught his eye. They were wonderful things, these fungi, thought Mr. Coombs, and all of them the deadliest poisons. Deadly poisons.
"This again," said the bacteriologist, "is, well, a preparation of the bacillus of cholera, the cholera germ." The pale-faced man peered down the microscope. He was evidently not accustomed to that kind of thing, and held a limp white hand over his disengaged eye. "I see very little," he said. "Touch this screw," said the bacteriologist. "Perhaps the microscope is out of focus for you." "Ah, now I see," said the visitor. "Not so very much to see after all. Little streaks and shreds of pink. And yet, those little particles, those mere atomies, might multiply and devastate a city. Wonderful."
"Seems to me taxidermy is a promising third course to burial or cremation. You could keep all your dear ones by you. Bric-a-brac of that sort stuck about the house would be as good as most company, and much less expensive. You might have them fitted up with clockwork to do things. Of course, they would have to be varnished, but they need not shine more than lots of people do naturally. Anyhow, you could talk to them without interruption, even aunts."
"I caught a ghost. It is the strangest thing that has ever happened in my life. I came upon him, you know, in the long passage. His back was towards me, and I saw him first. Right off, I knew him for a ghost. He was transparent and whitish. He turned on me sharply, and I saw the face of an immature young man, a weak nose, a scrubby little moustache, a feeble chin. So for an instant, we stood, he looking over his shoulder at me, and regarded one another. Then he turned round, drew himself up, projected his face, raised his arms, spread his hands in approved ghost fashion, came towards me. As he did so, his little jaw dropped, and he emitted a faint, drawn-out, 'Boo!'